morning.
Good morning.
Today is Wednesday, August 8, 2018. My name is Justice Douglas Lang. I sit on the 5th District Court of Appeals in Dallas, and I am the chair of the State Commission on Judicial Conduct. At this time, I will ask the other members of the commission to identify themselves for the record and for you. And I'll start from my right with Judge Ritz.
Good morning. My name is Ruben Reyes. I'm a district judge in Lubbock, Texas.
I'm a lawyer member of the commission, Ron Bunch from Waxahachie.
Good morning. I'm a county judge member from Lubbock County, Trevor Wojtek.
Good morning. Sujit Drakshara, public member, Sugar Land.
Good morning. My name is David Hall. I'm a county court at law judge from Sweetwater, Texas.
Good morning. Catherine Wiley. I'm a judge for the city of Houston.
Good morning. I'm David Russell. I'm a public member from Hayes County.
Good morning. I'm Demetrius Bivens. I'm an attorney member from Houston, Texas.
Good morning. I'm Maricela Alvarado, and I'm from Harlingen, Texas, public servant.
Amy Sewell from Sugarland, public member.
Good morning. I'm David Petronella. I'm a justice of the peace from Harris County.
Thank you, commission members. Today's proceedings are being conducted pursuant to section 33.0055 of the Texas Government Code, which requires the commission in even-numbered years to hold one public hearing, quote, to consider comment from the public regarding the commission's mission and operations, unquote. To that end, we are here today to accept public comment from those of you who have completed and turned in the witness affirmation form. And we have several that have been filled out and the form is available in the back. And this will be on matters that pertain to the commission's mission and operations. As I said, a copy of the form is available at the back of the room or through the clerk of the commission. Of course, it was available on the agency website. As a reminder, the registration period for those wishing to speak closes at 10:15 a.m., which is in about 11 minutes or so, and forms received after that time may be considered at the chair's discretion. I want to point out that we did convene at 10 a.m. as appointed, and it's now approximately 4 minutes after 10. I will now read to you the commission's statement. I quote, the mission of the State Commission on Judicial Conduct is to protect the public, promote public confidence in the integrity, independence, competence, and impartiality of the judiciary, and to encourage judges to maintain high standards of conduct both on and off the bench. The Commission accomplishes this mission through its investigation of allegations of judicial misconduct or incapacity. In cases where a judge is found to have engaged in misconduct or to be permanently incapacitated, the Texas Constitution authorizes the commission to take appropriate disciplinary action up to and including issuing sanctions, censures, suspensions, or recommendations for removal from office, unquote. Please be advised that section 33.0055 also provides that your comments, quote, are to be considered in a manner which does not compromise the confidentiality of matters considered by the commission, unquote. In order to satisfy this provision, we ask you not to discuss a complaint or investigation that is or may be pending in our office or that has been dismissed or that resulted in private discipline. By law, those matters remain confidential. Likewise, please be advised that this is not a forum for filing grievance against judges or for asking the commission to reconsider a decision relating to any complaint filed against the judge. There are specific procedures in place for bringing the type of information to the commission's attention, and we ask you to please follow those protocols, which you can find on the website. Remember, each person who testifies will be limited to 5 minutes. However, you may submit written testimony in addition to or in lieu of your oral testimony, and we will accept any such written testimony as an exhibit. Since the sole purpose of this hearing is to consider public comment, commission members and commission staff will not be responding to any questions or discussing the testimony of any witnesses. Any comments from this commission will come through the chair. This hearing is being recorded. If you would like a copy of the recording, please submit a written request to the agency through its executive director, Eric Vinson. The use of cameras, smartphones, or other recording devices is permitted as long as their use does not hinder and is not disrupted to these proceedings. Food and drinks are not permitted in this room. Now, we have several witness affirmation forms. I have them, they were provided to me, as I understand it, in the sequence with which they were filed. And so I will call them in order, and I will call each one in turn, and each person will have 5 minutes to comment, as I just described to you. So when the witness comes forward, I ask the witness to stand at the podium. The microphone is on, so what you say will be recorded, and identify yourself, and then you may proceed with your comment for 5 minutes. All right, the first person, and I apologize if I do not read the handwriting well or I get your name wrong, but I will make my best effort. The first one is Isolana Anita Jones Bird. Ms. Jones Bird.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much, I must say, for taking the time to have this type of forum, this public forum, so that we, the public, get an opportunity to address your mission and your procedures as they relate to us in the public. I am Isolina Anita Jones Bird. My brother, Ralph Bryant Jones, he was a 25-year Air Force retired deceased veteran. He blessed me 7 years before he passed away to stand before you here today. My God knew and prepared me for this day. I'm a working class person, but through my God, Ralph blessed me financially through his passing. And he prepared me and allowed me to be here today to speak to you on behalf of the middle working class and the poor. Okay, who reside in the state of Texas and who have legal issues and have been called before the judicial system. Whether this situation is of our own doing or the doing of others, we the people who elect the judges trust the judge sitting on the bench and hold him or her to a higher standing of integrity and to comply with the laws of the land of the United States, and in this case, the state of Texas. I stand before you today to address my concerns and opinions in the processes and procedures of the State Commission on Judicial Conduct. The sitting judge knows that he or she has immunity. The United States Supreme Court has made it clear that when judges perform judicial acts within their jurisdiction, they are absolutely immune from money damages lawsuits. This applies even if those actions were corrupt, malicious, and illegal. The group of people most abused by this judicial immunity is the working class and poor class of people. We wear many colors to our skin, but mostly of dark color. Judges also know the working middle class and the poor class of people do not have the financial resources readily available to appeal their biased racially motivated collusion and corruptive-driven decisions. Therefore, they abuse the power of authority and discretion they have been given and entrusted by the very people who have elected them into office. Your commission makes it very hard to right the wrong of these groups of people that they experience because you reprimand only conduct. Your commission is costly to purchase transcripts from a trial to prove the judge's conduct. In my case, my transcripts cost $1,342. Most people just don't have that money available. But it does help to prove the judge's conduct at that time. Misguided, it is costly to hire an appeals attorney to right the wrong of the horrible misguided rulings handed down by the sitting judge. I personally have had my family torn apart by a judge who used biased and personal feelings, collusion, opposing counsel, and court-appointed guardian ad litem whom he appointed. And moreover, he totally disregarded the law of Texas. A child was stolen, yes, stolen. Harsh, isn't it? But it is the truth. Through a judge's actions, he abused the judicial system. Why, you ask? Because he can. Because he has immunity for his actions, right or wrong.
Yeah, a little bit less than a minute.
Most people have to live with the ruling because they cannot afford a legal appealing. The class of people consistently abused by this judicial system when a judge abuses his or her discretion and authority. So, if the judge has numerous complaints, we are in the age of computer and big data. I would like to see create an investigative department within your team. Investigate the patterns and the trends and the behaviors of the judge. What attorneys are coming before the judge with them within these complaints and before the judge that's brought before your commission? We the people cannot all not be telling the truth. Moreover, the actions of the judges are also very important. The horrible conduct and the misguided actions of the judge, I believe that the actions as well as the conduct should be considered when looking at a judge and how he is to be reprimanded. Thank you very much for your time today and the opportunity to speak before you.
And thank you very much. The next witness will be Michael Clifton. Mr. Clifton, as with Ms. Jones Bird, you will have 5 minutes, sir. And if you wish to submit anything in writing, accept it as an exhibit.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, Chairman and Commission members. My name is Michael Clifton. I'm here today to address 3 issues, and I'll try to be as concise as possible within the time frames. Specifically, judicial nonfeasance, defined in Black's Law Dictionary as, quote, the neglect or failure of a person to do some act which he ought to do. The term is not generally used to denote a breach of contract, but rather the failure to perform a duty towards the public whereby some individual sustains special damage, end quote. Second item, judicial accountability. And finally, noncompliance with court orders, their own court orders. It is abundantly clear that based on both information from your very own website and the most recent report by the Sunset Advisory Commission, this oversight entity is failing miserably. You are non-compliant to your own mission statement, which states in part that the SCJC is to, I quote, and this was stated earlier, protect the public, promote public confidence in the integrity, independence, competence, and impartiality of the judiciary, end quote. Now, internally, how are you to accomplish this? Again, I quote, the commission accomplishes this mission through its investigation of allegations of judicial misconduct or incapacity. In cases where a judge is found to have engaged in misconduct or to be permanently incapacitated, the Texas Constitution authorizes the commission to take appropriate disciplinary action, including issuing sanctions, censures, suspensions, or recommendations for removal from office. End quote. It defies logic to me that you will find any semblance of misconduct if you arbitrarily dismiss almost 9 out of 10 complaints brought to this body's attention. This is reflected factually in the SCJC documentation by the following examples. 1, the SCJC annual report for fiscal year 2017, and I quote, "The commission received a record number of cases filed during fiscal year 2017, end quote, and also exampled by, quote, extraordinary, your word, growth in the number of complaints received in 2017, end quote. Yet conversely, quote, the number of disciplinary actions against district judges continued its downward trend from 29 in 2015 to 13 in 2017, end quote. This is a greater than 50% decrease in just this one category of judges alone. The SCJC philosophy states, quote, each complaint on its face is thoroughly investigated, end quote. The facts do not support this statement when statistics from 2007 forward reflect a year-over-year increase of cases filed and the respective dismissals also increase. Your published budget of roughly $930,000 annually for 13 employees is predominantly allocated to objects other than enforcement. Perhaps it's time to prioritize enforcement allocations since the most recent self-evaluation report dated 2011 via the Sunset Review, the SCJC specifically states a key obstacle to achieving your objectives is, and I quote, number three, the size of the board, 13 members, is too large, costly, and unnecessary, end quote. Perhaps the greater than $54,000 in travel expenses and the greater than $25,000 in professional fees and services could better be utilized to implement your mission statement of, quote, protect the public, promote public confidence in the integrity, independence, competence, and impartiality of the judiciary. Let's move on to noncompliance of judges to their own court orders, specifically judges presiding over family court matters and enforcement of interference with child custody laws, specifically Texas Penal Code 2503, which is a felony in the state of Texas, as well as the notice to peace officers. Thank you, Chair. The notice to peace officers disclaimer, which is standard language in all Texas custody orders. In short, when judges refuse to enforce custodial visitation orders, it is directly affecting the public and by extension our children. To the extent of no less than emotional and physical harm, but worst case scenario, the death of a child, something we are seeing an increase in recently. In light of the overwhelming dismissal values, how can this body be statutorily directed to provide specific citings of why a complaint was dismissed, yet you provide a standard form letter stating the complaint was dismissed by citing generalities of, I quote, a judge's discretionary decisions, end quote. This standard form letter, I'm confident, was not the legislative intent of Senate Bill 209 nor Senate Joint Resolution 42 for providing the required, quote, reasons in plain language why the complaint failed to meet the definition of judicial misconduct. In closing, all of these issues have a direct correlation to this oversight entity. The atmosphere of minimal accountability, the public perception of a slap on the wrist, possibly, and the irrefutable decrease in disciplinary actions proves that this entity has failed in its mission of protecting the public as well as providing confidence in the integrity of the judiciary. I'll leave you with this recommendation. You can and should do better. The data supports this position. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. The next witness, and we have several more of them. And we'll take them in order that they were signed up, just as I indicated before. The next witness is Joshua Charas. Is that correct? Okay, let's go forward, sir. And, sir, you do have 5 minutes. And I allowed that gentleman to sum up, but I really do want to keep it at five, so, because there are many people that want to talk.
Sure.
All right, thank you.
My name is Joshua Jarris. I work closely with a lot of parental rights groups and children's rights groups here in Texas, mostly closely associated with Americans for Parental Equality. And I'm here today representing thousands of parents across Texas who have gone through the family court system. I don't know how many of you have had any experience with the family court system, but reading your mission statement, to protect the public, to promote public confidence in integrity, independence, competence and impartiality of the court system. And you know, whenever somebody comes to court, they're looking for one thing. They're looking for justice. They want to know if they're coming into that court that they're going to see justice in the end. And I can tell you right now, unwaveringly, that the parents that have gone through our Texas courts, our Texas family court system, have absolutely zero confidence in Texas family courts. It is at an epidemic level right now. People don't want to go in there because when they go in there, they don't see justice. I want to share with you just really quickly, if you don't know much about family court, I know we have, there's some public members here. If two parents decide that they want to get a divorce, or maybe there's a custody a decision that needs to be made, two parents walk into that courtroom, and the judge removes the parental rights from those parents and redistributes those rights back to those parents. One parent leaves being the custodial parent. The second parent leaves as a visitor to his children. We took a look at one county, Brazoria County. 95% of the cases coming out of Brazoria County showed that one parent was left with just four nights a month with his children or her children. 9 out of 10 times here in Texas, that happens to be dad. And you're thinking, well, equality, we need to have dads at the same level as moms, but that's not what parents want. Parents want their parental rights to be protected. They want to know if they go into a court that they're going to have the U.S. Constitution protecting them. I mean, we have the due process clauses that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, and property. And yet we have parents across Texas that are going into these courts and being reduced to a visitor. And there is no confidence. There is no justice found. The Texas Family Code is not above the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution protects parents, and we're not seeing that here in the court systems. And I got to ask myself, why is that? And what we found out is this one thing, that it's not justice that rules our courts, it's money. We've discovered that judges have a pecuniary interest, a financial interest, in ordering child support and ordering unequal parenting orders, because through that, the federal government will give incentives called Title 4D. These judges are receiving money to issue these orders out. Their salaries are paid through the county. That is a direct conflict of interest. And I would ask, how are we missing that? How is our court system so unfair? I'm sure that you have had thousands of cases that have come before you of parents that feel like their rights were violated. I know that's got to be true because I meet daily with parents. I see stories daily. We have tens and thousands of parents across our state who are visitors to their children. You can't tell me that the founders of our country believe that this could possibly be right. You can't tell me that the judicial system that we have here in Texas is somehow fair, that somehow children and the best interests of the children is paramount to our judicial system. It's all about the money. It's all about the money. And when we have judges making decisions, thank you, when we have judges making decisions on what rulings they make because they will receive money and it will pad their pocketbook in the end, that is a conflict of interest. Again, it's we're not getting justice. And I would ask you to investigate. A lot of you have had cases that have come up. Look into it. Right now, how can a judge be impartial in Texas when they are receiving their salary through unequal parenting orders? It can't be done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next witness is Gabrielle Cornaco.
Hey, it's going to be a difficult one.
Well, I apologize to advance and I apologize to you for not getting it right, but you are now before us,
we'll
call you, but you have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you very much for having me over here. My name is Gabriel Brain. I'm from Cypress, Texas. My life has changed dramatically twice, and both events have happened through a judge decision. First happened back in 1996 when my brother was accused of doing something he didn't do. And our attorney at the time asked us, what do we want? A trial by judge or a trial by jury? The word judge to my family meant everything. Someone we could trust. Someone who does the right thing. So we did trial by judge, which nowadays I would tell somebody you're crazy.
Yes.
I believe what it meant to be a judge. The judge turned his back on us when we needed him the most. The officer lied. They convicted my brother. First, he said that my brother had talked to him and made a deal with him. 2 years later, he said he never met my brother till they arrested him. When we asked the judge to pull the court files, conveniently, they lost all the recording and transcripts. My brother went to prison for 8 years and was left behind to raise his children from the age of 2 and 6. That was the judge's decision. Changed my life dramatically. My second event happened, 2016. I was with my wife at home. They knocked on the door and said that I was a deadbeat dad. I said, you made a mistake. My children are upstairs with my wife. I meant those. A judge in 2003 found me guilty of being a father of a child that I knew nothing of. Had no relationship with the mother whatsoever. And I was never served with no papers of service in his file. That just determined I was a dad. I believed in the legal system. I believed in justice. When this happened to me, I walked into a court without a lawyer because I believe I could speak my way out of this. I was treated like an animal, spoken to as an unintelligent person, and I was asked to be quiet or be held on something that I didn't know was called contempt. Contempt, because what does that contempt word mean? It means I'm not allowed to say what I feel because you just don't like what I have to say. I was oppressed, held down, and I had to go find an attorney because that's the only way I was being heard. Now I understood something. This is a machine. So I took a step back and I told my wife, let's find out what's going on because I don't know what I'm fighting here. My paternity test proved that I wasn't the father. I was never served. In 18 years, nothing was ever given to me. I had a Texas driver's license from day to night. I'm a dad. And they just still wanted to fight the case. They still allowed the case to be a case for 2 years. It cost us an immense amount of money. You have no idea what it is like to be held by a wrong decision, being innocent and have to live through what I lived through. But that's something I can put up with because I'm a man. I had to watch my children live through this. My kid could not play baseball because I couldn't afford it. We had to downsize. So many things happened to my family because of judge decision. When I went to family court, I went 3 times a week for 3 months to understand what was going on. And what I saw made me sick to my stomach. I've seen people become abusers without ever having a history of being abused. But yet, because somebody said it, that person was not given a trial or nothing. Automatically, protective order was given. I've seen people that come in to ask for a reduction of his payment because they lost their job, only to be thrown in jail a couple weeks later for no compliance. I've seen people's constitutional rights being thrown in the garbage with a simple phrase that means I'm going to violate your constitution, you can do nothing about it. It's called the best interest of the child, which means I'm leaving it to my discretion.
1 minute, sir.
The discretion of a judge is not more, worth more than the Constitution of the United States and our rights as citizens. No judge has the power to do that to a human being. You guys have to make this right, because the word judge no longer means what it meant to mean. Thank you.
And thank you, sir. The next witness is Melor Resendez.
Yes. It's a difficult name to pronounce, but thank you for giving it a shot.
I tried. Right.
Thank you,
ma'am. You have 5 minutes.
Yes, thank you all for being here. I appreciate you listening to my story. My name is Mary Luz Resendez. I am from San Antonio, Texas. I want to read out a couple of statistics. 1 in 4 women in the United States are victims of domestic violence. 1 in 6 women or girls will be sexually assaulted by the age of 18. It's in a astounding statistic when you think about, 6 people on the court. If you just look at the judicial panel, 6 people on the court, if you were women, you would have been sexually assaulted by the time you're 18 years old. Joan Meyer conducted a study. She's a law professor at George Washington University for an organization called DV Leap. And she conducted a study. It was a small, minor study. I think that she took 500 cases nationwide. And I think there's a misconception, you know, because initially women were given, you know, rights to children and divorce settlings and stuff. And I think that the population as a whole has this misconception that when you step into family court, you're automatically given custody if you're a female. I think what a lot of people don't realize is that 70% of cases are settled between parents at divorce. You know, they settle the cases. They agree to, here's your visitation, here's my visitation. And then the other 25% are mediated. There's a total of 3% of cases that are actually contested. The contested cases in court, by a lot of experts in the domestic violence field, they have, based on, you know, feedback studies that have been conducted, they have come to the conclusion that 3% of the cases that are contested are the most dangerous cases that exist. The most dangerous cases that exist. Personally, you know, myself, I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I went through a contested custody case. As the gentleman indicated earlier, I chose to go through jury because I had talked to so many people, women living in shelters, so many advocates nationwide, so many people that had gone through the judicial system, and women, and they were telling me, Mary Lou, you have no idea what just happened. I spent my entire life savings. I went through hell. I got litigated for 10, 12 years. And I lost all custody of my children. I was put on the stand, and not only did I have to deal with domestic violence from this person, but these are the type of people that if they're abusing their wives, or even men or women that are abusing men, if they're capable of that level of abuse, it only extends into the judicial setting because they know that they can get away with it, and they found ways to use the system to their advantage. In steps, you know, also studies have shown that less than 3% of cases are actual false allegations of sexual violence and also domestic violence. I mean, nobody wants to go into a court setting, I think, and have to get beat up. I was torn to shreds for 10 days in a jury setting. I was torn to shreds for 3 years in a court hearing. I spent the better part of $250,000 litigating this. I have lost 6 months of my life. I lost my son's college education. I lost 20 years of savings. I lost pretty much everything. And no, this isn't a fun position to be in. Nobody wakes up every day and says, you know what? I want to go and lose everything, just lose everything. And what did this buy me exactly? Well, what it bought me was an individual that made me move 3 times. Have no protective order. My children still have to go visit him while he sits with 6 guns under his bed. If I had to put the profile of what a mass shooter looks like, I think he would be the poster child. And he gets to step into court and have his rights defended, and I think that that is part of the justice system. But I think that there comes a point where you get these people that are able to bring in experts. They come into court, and most of it is junk science. It's not even approved by the Psychiatric Board of Psychology. Thank you, sir. And they come in, and they have junk science that is, the judges say, you can bring it in, and they can spin and go in every direction with that. And people buy it. You know, sometimes juries buy it. Sometimes judges buy it. So what I ask of you today is to consider that on an average, there are 58,000 children nationwide that are being sent off into abusive situations. And 80% of sexually abused children across the country, according to the study, which was 500, they're going to do a 5,000, are being sent into sole custody of perpetrators. Those children's voices need to be heard. And these women don't have money to hire an attorney. That's how they're losing. And these counselors that are taking tons of money to handle these cases from attorneys are also need to be held accountable to some level of discretion. Thank you, judges. I appreciate it.
And thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Appreciate your appearance. The next witness is Doreen Sims. You have 5 minutes, ma'am.
Thank you. Good morning. I've come here today to talk a little bit about what my friend Mary just spoke about with domestic violence and how it interprets to what you guys do today. Now, first of all, let me tell you, I moved here in 2007 from D.C. My ex-husband told me that I should leave all my appointments that I got from city council, mayor's office, and the then governor, and come down here and live in lovely Texas. And so I did, because we wanted to raise family, and we wanted to be happy and buy a home and still travel. Unfortunately, we got divorced, and I do appreciate what you're doing today, because it's not easy to listen to everyone's viewpoints and then walk the road of what your commission is asked to do. So what I'm going to ask you today is to consider this. The problem that I faced in family court started with my pregnancy and ended in my death. I died giving birth to my daughter. I later found out when I was asked to sit on the board of HB 2620 that my death was a part of emotional abuse that I served during my pregnancy. And my daughter's near death was the same result. So I'm going into court to face my abusers and going into court to protect my child 15 months after she was born. There weren't enough laws in the books to kind of say, hey, this is what's going on, even though the AG flagged my case as domestic violence. And then we had witnesses of domestic violence. The judge who looked at my our case decided to ignore the AG's office, decided to ignore all of the things, and basically sent my child off to her abuser. And I say that because he has abused her. And 4 years later, it's finally been admitted in court by a judge, but no one will protect her. I then went through abuse in a different way in court. And the abuse that I went through in court was being yelled at, screamed at, treated as if I was ignorant or dumb. I was told that through actions, not in words, that due process no longer lives as a pro se member of the court, of the society. So I have sat through, I have recently just had a witness sworn in and a contempt hearing that none of the evidence was allowed to be brought in. Our witness was not able to be heard. And I never made an opening or closing statement. I got yelled at a lot, and I also had a lot of accusations thrown at me that I could not present evidence against. And then the orders that were broken were never in contempt. They agreed that the orders were broken, but they didn't have the ability to actually do anything, which is actually untrue. So we have a problem in family court, and we have a problem with faith in the public going. Now, I could have easily written something off. I could have spent my time away from my daughter and written a letter to you guys and said, hey, I need you to fix this. Because I've actually had a judge stand up and be so angry that he stormed out of the courtroom and was slamming every door. I've been yelled at. I've been called names. And I've actually recently heard a judge call a child chattel. Now, for those of you who know your history, chattel is not a welcome word. A child is not a possession. They are a person. And chattel refers to slavery. And certainly, we are not slaves to this process. And a child is a person. We have a problem. We need to do some more education, but we also have to look within your system and what you have done here and what you guys do here. And I think that one of the things that we need to do, and I say we because I think it's a process. I think it's a process with the public, and I think it's a process with your commission, is to look at better ways to hear the complaints and what's being said. And I also believe we need to hold the standards to Canon 3, where the judges need to be working within the law, and that they need to be holding up public. There's no reason for us to be walking out saying that was against the family code.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next witness is George E. Sullivan.
Morning.
Sorry, Mr.
Stoudland,
you have 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. I didn't come prepared. I didn't want to speak today, but I guess only saw 4 or 5 people in here, and I thought I'd entertain you guys for a little bit. So I'm a joint managing conservator pro se father. My child lives in Harris County. 343 days is what I have with my child. I'm not even a visitor to my child. I have a court order with that state seal on it. I don't see my child. Mr. Clifton talked about Texas Penal Code 25.03, interference with child custody. That's the route I have to go. As a pro se filer, I can't afford to keep going to court every time someone breaks the law that you guys have taken over. We have a state seal. We have, I mean, you recited when we first started the government code. We can go to these websites, we can look at these statutes, we can read the canons. You know, you have to be respectful towards litigants. When I go in there, because I filed my own motion for enforcement by contempt, just to see my child, and I can't produce any evidence, and the judge just, I'm gonna treat you like an attorney. Okay, well, it's fine. Civil rules of procedure, you need to follow civil rules of procedure to be able to introduce evidence. Okay, I get it. But 308A in the civil rules of procedure also state that you can enforce those orders. I didn't get that. So today I'm at 343 days, I didn't see my child. 343. I can't overemphasize. I don't know where he's at. I don't. If you didn't know where your child was for 343 days, you'd be pretty upset. And I'm trying to keep it in because I am upset. I'm here today trying to be a father. I'm trying to be in my child's life. I'm not a visitor. They won't even let me see my child. And I got the standard visitation order that infuriates me. Mike's talked about Mr. Clifton's talked about the statistics. I filed a complaint once on a judge. I didn't hear anything else about it. I went through the whole process. I did everything y'all asked me to. Submitted the transcripts. I didn't get nothing back in return. So why even do it? Why do it again? Anyway, I don't want to go off on a tangent. I know some people went over 5 minutes, so I'm going to just... We need to do better. It's up to you guys on this board to fix this. The family code and the family law needs to be reformed. I mean, this is ridiculous. Everybody in here, mostly everybody we've talked to already, has already said that it's family law they have a problem with. The family code needs to be redone. Pro se filers need a little bit more respect.
This is not about family code.
I'm just trying to be a father. That's it. That's why I'm here today. Just so I can see my 2-year-old son. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Next witness is Kelly Jones. Ms. Jones, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, commissioners, your honors, and particularly Mr. Russell from my county, Hays County. I come before you, my name is Kelly Jones, and I'm in the unique position this week of being all over the national news. My ex-husband is Alex Jones. He's been removed from platforms from Facebook to YouTube for videos replete with hate speech and child endangerment. I'd like to rely on the eloquence of the first speaker, Ms. Jones, the statistics of the second gentleman who spoke about the systematic failures of this commission to address the failings or to fail to protect the public according to your bylaws and the information you put out about which this hearing is being held, in addition to drawing on the trauma of these other two beautiful mothers And speaking from the experience of being a domestic abuse survivor, I won a jury trial in 2017 despite the evidentiary bias and gross negligence of the judge to exclude footage from InfoWars, which was directly related to my cause, a cause of child custody, where I was defending myself from false allegations that my ex-husband perpetrated that were shown to be false by experts who admitted lying under oath and in reports, which is aggravated perjury and false reporting, which are crimes which Judge Orlando Naranjo should have immediately indicted those people or pressed for their indictment when they were in the courtroom. But I won this jury trial, and despite the ruling for me to be primary parent, the standard of which in the Texas Family Code is for me to have primary custody immediately of my children, my case having been based on abuse, gross negligence, medical neglect, and quasi-abandonment, horrific information about prostitutes in the household, heavy drinking, with hard evidence, untreated broken bones that were failed to be reported on by the experts in my case. And that's how I won a jury, despite Judge Naranjo controlling everything to try to keep the evidence out, even kicking the jury out when evidence she had admitted was aired before the jury. Despite this jury verdict, it took her 8 months to enter final orders, which are not compliant with the Texas Family Code, which leave my vulnerable children primarily with my ex-husband, Alex Jones. My son was put on the most hated show in America, a show that has been withdrawn from platforms from Facebook to YouTube. My son, I couldn't get the judge last week to hear an emergency temporary restraining order. She misrepresented what...
I want to remind you again, we're not here to hear grievances.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I'm so sorry, but I'm bringing this forward as a history. And my intention is actually to be within the scope of what we're talking about, is your failure to protect. I believe, and I will cut it off there, and I'd appreciate you drawing me back if I leave the boundaries, because I want to, with all respect, I'm grateful for this opportunity, and I want to keep focused on the fact. I am traumatized and upset because I was assaulted on the third floor of the courtroom of the courthouse last week by Judge Naranjo, physically had her come at me ex parte and grab my phone.
I warn you again, ma'am, you are certainly within your rights to file a complaint if you like to.
I have filed a complaint, Your Honor.
But we are not here to hear that.
Okay, if I could have the respect of having a few extra minutes for the correction, because what I was told when I filed my complaint is there is no remedy, that my cause is going to be heard with the same urgency of any cause. I am a litigant who was assaulted ex parte by a judge on the third floor of the courthouse across the street, and I've been told that there is no remedy in the local governmental rules nor in the governmental code for the... I'm not talking about my complaints. I'm talking about the history of the thing. I'm not... I apologize. Thank you, Your Honor. So what I've been told and what I'm here to say is I believe that the Judicial Commission and the state of Texas is in an emergency situation. I have an article that I'm going to be in the New York Times wherein I hope they will put forward my plea that the governor immediately incept an emergency legislative section to immediately provide a remedy for the SCJC, whatever y'all are called, to immediately act to be able to protect the public. Because when I spoke to Mr. Eric Vincent just a couple days ago, he said there is no remedy in the local governmental rules or the governmental rules. There's remedy for local judges, but not for district judges. You, according to this testimony that you provided, sir, at your opening statement or whatever that is called, you said that you all have the power to suspend a judge. This judge has repeatedly, with bias, attacked mothers.
Thank you for...
I'm being cut off. Have I spoken for 5 minutes?
Ma'am, I've just pointed out several times, respectfully, that you are talking about a particular judge in a particular instance, and we are not here to hear.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I didn't understand at your opening statement there was nothing said about a particular judge.
Well, we did, and there was a paragraph here about...
Okay, I'll be asking for an audio recording of that. I'd like to finish up then, or I won't talk about the judge, and I'll talk about how I feel that you're failing families. I feel that when a complaint is made to you, according to the statistics of a second gentleman, that you're not following through with disciplinary action on judges. I feel that you have obviously received multiple complaints on the same judges repeatedly, and yet when somebody's in an actual emergency situation where their children are in physical danger, according to the other party, that they could be killed, is child endangerment, that you fail to act with any haste, and the excuses, there's no remedy in the law. If there's no remedy in the law, we need remedy in the law. If there's no way for you all to intercede to impeach a judge, you can't suspend them. This is an emergency for my family, but not just mine. It's an emergency for any family that's heard before any of these judges, the complaints of whom you are leaving languishing when there are parents across the board that are here to testify that that's what's going on in Travis County Family Court is broken and corrupt. I have filed a civil liberties complaint with the federal government.
Ma'am, you over 6 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you for hearing. Thank you for hearing my cause. I'm impassioned because my kids are in an emergency. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Appreciate your appearance today. And the next witness is Joseph Meyer.
Thank you for this opportunity. I ask that you'll forgive my allergies if I weaken my voice just a little bit, but I am glad to be here today. So many of the others have already mentioned the same things that weigh on my mind and on my heart about the family law system in the state of Texas. Pardon me. I'll try not to reiterate too many of those points. I do hope that this commission does take a very close look at what is going on in these family courtrooms, the behavior from the judges, the absolute misconduct. we've heard someone spoke about a jury trial. I went in for a jury trial. Mine was delayed, and effectively, they did away with my jury trial because the judge was able to stall for 2 years, and then 2 weeks before the jury trial said we cannot have the jury trial because we're not ready, even though we'd had 2 years to prepare for it. This judge was also on his way out of the bench. He had lost an election. I am a custodial parent. I have custody of my two boys, but yet I still pay child support to a mother who lives in Seattle, Washington. That is because of another judge who refuses to enforce her own rulings, and I'm having to go about this another way and fight and work with the Attorney General's office to correct the child support issue. This mother was required to return to the state before August 15th of last year, did not comply with the judge's order, and the judge refused to hear any evidence or even define what her own order meant in order to put the children into my custody and to correct everything that goes with that. So here I am still paying child support while taking care of two children. Again, there's so much I could talk about. I know I'm limited, and these other folks have mentioned a lot of the same problems. But something's got to be fixed because it's the children who suffer. The children who are moved repeatedly, who are forced to move from school to school more than they should. They have no consistency in their life because you spend 3 to 4 years and a lot of money trying to fight to right these wrongs from a parent who is only concerned with herself and not concerned with the well-being of the children. The children become leverage in these family court situations because there's financial gain in it for the parent who can maintain control of the children. And that's what prevails. Judges are not listening to evidence. They're disregarding evidence. In my particular case, the person I was against in court was found to be dishonest through the evidence that we prevented. The judge was angered to the point of calling a recess because of the dishonesty that was shown. Yet no action was taken because of said dishonesty. The judge merely came back and we picked up where we left off as if nothing had ever happened. Family members of the mother of my children, their testimony even corroborated my testimony and my evidence given, but it didn't seem to matter that much. She was still given a second chance to return to the state and maintain primary custody. She didn't do so. The children were left with her grandparents, and that wasn't what the ruling said. So just in plain, simple speak, that's what goes on in family courts. It's not just me. I have met so many other people who have had the same type of situation, who have been through the same frustration, the amount of money, the amount of time. It's not about winning in these courts, and unfortunately I think the judges look at it as simply a win-lose situation. I was told that I got a big win because my children were returned to the state of Texas. but it's not about winning. It's about what's right for them. I had to fight an additional year just to get them into my custody. But thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The next witness is Taryn F. Champagne. Correct?
Yes, sir.
You have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. My name is Taryn Champagne, and I would like to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to speak on the topic of judicial misconduct. My topic of concern today is the current state of the Texas family court system. I will point out the failings of how the family court system conducts itself and how the family court system flagrantly disregards any system or semblance of justice. I will start with Title V of the Texas Family Code, Subtitle B, Chapter 153, Subchapter A. Section 153.002, best interest of the child. The best interest of the child shall always be the primary consideration of the court in determining the issuance of conservatorship and possession of and access to the child. Currently, the common rulings provided by the majority of judges in this state do not in any way, shape, or form strive to consider the best interest of the child. The standard possession order, and in some cases the expanded standard possession order, artificially limit time children can spend with one of their parents. In the case of most rulings, though not all, fathers are given far less time with their children. It is generally a rubber stamp process where deviation from these standard orders is lacking. If what is noted on the Attorney General's website is indicative of what actually happens in the court system, 90% of non-custodial parents are fathers. Assuming most of these rulings result in the standard or extended standard possession order, this restriction of time is highly detrimental to the development of children. A few choice statistics can help to elucidate this. Fatherless children are at a dramatically greater risk of drug and alcohol abuse. 71% of high school dropouts are fatherless. Fatherless children have more trouble academically, scoring poorly on tests of reading, mathematics, and thinking skills. Children from father-absent homes are more likely to be truant from school, more likely to be excluded from school, more likely to leave school at age 16, and less likely to attain academic and professional qualifications in adulthood. A study of 1,409 rural southern adolescents, 851 females and 558 males, age 11 to 18 years old, investigated the correlation between father absence and self-reported sexual activity. The results revealed that adolescents in father-absent homes were more likely to report being sexually active compared to adolescents living with their fathers. In addition, the federal government noted the following in their publication, The Importance of Fathers in the Healthy Development of Children. Highly involved biological fathers had children who were 43% more likely than other children to earn mostly A's and 33% less likely than other children to repeat a grade. And even from birth, children who have an involved father are more likely to be emotionally secure, be confident to explore their surroundings, and as they grow older, have better social connections with their peers. Even with this small amount of evidence presented here, current standard rulings blatantly disregard the best interests of the child. However, these fatherless children are more often than not created not by fathers leaving their children, but by the court system's actions, as evidenced by the following. In the Texas Family Code, 153.001 public policy. The public policy of the state is to assure that children will have frequent and continuing contact with parents who have shown the ability to act in the best interests of the child and encourage parents to share in the rights and duties of raising their child after the parents have separated or dissolved their marriage. Part one implies that a parent needs to be proven to act in the best interests of the child. In the syllabus of the court case Troxell versus Granville, it was written that there is a presumption that fit parents act in the best interest of the child. Along with this, frequent and ongoing contact is an ambiguous definition. In the case of the standard possession order, children spend approximately 33% of the nights of the year with a non-custodial parent. In the case of the expanded standard possession order, that is approximately 40%. Even in that case, that is often a difference of approximately 60 overnights per year. Thank you. Part three is so regarded that it is ludicrous. The system is founded on conflict. Three parties walk into the court and enter into a winner-takes-all battle where only one party walks out as the winner, the primary custodial parent. The losers are mainly the child, who has a loving bond with their parent severed and potentially permanently damaged by the court system and the non-custodial parent. This system generates intense conflict that is in no way conducive to encourage parents to share in the rights and duties of raising a child. Both the 5th and 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution state that individuals will not be deprived of life, liberty, or pursuit without due process of law. The overall liberty of children to have equal and ongoing access to both parents is deprived by the courts under the ill-defined and nebulous best interests of the child. Current orders issued by the state court fail to act in accordance with these guidelines and the Texas Family Code and are often detrimental to our children of the state of Texas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The next witness is Jimmy D. Wheeler. Wheeler. Mr. Wheeler, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Commission, and thank you for hearing me out. And this is David Bagnetta from Harris County, my district here. I'm Jimmy Wheeler from Houston, Harris County, Texas. I'm up here to speak on, I hear everybody else giving their testimony on family court and the judicial criminal system, but I haven't heard anyone say anything about the civil judge and civil district court in Houston, Texas, which I heard a young lady here saying how corrupt the system is here. Well, I look at the civil district court in Houston as the court that monetary granted awards are given to. And we're talking about corrupt, they are bought and paid for by the big banks, big financial institutions, the judges are, and big corporations. And the one who put the money behind them was the big law firm. Case in fact, I had several decisions of friends of mine I speak for that I helped them out financially that could not afford the financial system in the civil court, because remember, in the civil court, you're not given a court attorney. You have to pay for an attorney. And the judges rush to decision to a summary judgment, although they set up a trial, a jury trial, but they rush it to a summary judgment. The case example, your big financial institutions. We know the big banks, how they committed millions and billions of dollars of mortgage fraud throughout the whole state of Texas. Not one executive spent a day in prison. But you take the little person who was behind on their mortgages in several situations, the bank foreclosed on them, kicked them out, the law strictly tells statute of limitation in Texas, several cases that I'm fighting now for clients of mine and friends of mine. Statute of limitation, the civil court says if no payment is made in 4 years, that is a statute of limitation, and therefore their property, real property, cannot be taken. Here's an example. If your grandmother or your mother had a lawsuit and she falls into a store, a big retail outlet, and turn around and sue 1 day past the statute of limitation, those judges would deny because they missed the statute of limitation by 1 day. Here in Texas, we have banks that missed the statute of limitation by 1 year. Texas Supreme Court outlined it, and judges ruled in favor of the big banks, the financial institution, and taking the houses from the smaller person, and without going, and they cannot afford for a retrial or appeal. And the Texas Supreme Court states it very, very clear, statute of limitation, but when you look at the judge and see who backed him in the civil district court, they're backed by these big banks and institutions. 95% to 97% of these summary judgments, because they don't want to go, these summary judgments are issued against the smaller person in favor of the big banks. You, as a commissioner, this commission that we lie on, please protect the person, the smaller person. Please go back and recommend these judges and go ahead and put them, you guys are failing very poorly on this. You're very good commission, you guys understand what I'm saying. Y'all are failing very poorly on here, and y'all, how many of these judges on the silver side has been suspended for wrongdoing? And they know they're wrong. The law is strictly stated. So here's this little person, home is this castle, knowing he could win, knowing he got the champ, knowing that the judge did not make the decision in favor of the Texas Constitution Supreme Court, which issued statute of limitation, and they cannot file for an appeal. They don't have the money. So the big banks win, the big financial institution win, the judge continued to line his pockets. So are we, governor, for is Texas for the people, or are we bought and paid for by the big financial institution, the big banks? Case in fact, Wells Fargo credit card scheme. The person who was the chief executive officer of that division get a retirement serving package of $200 million. Several employees that worked up under them got fired and wind up with nothing. Please help the small person, I beg you guys, and look at the law in the state of Texas.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wheeler. The next witness is Cynthia Schultz. Once again, I apologize for, maybe I didn't read your handwriting correctly.
No, not a problem.
But
it's been mispronounced for years.
Okay. Thank you very much, ma'am, for your appearance, and you do have time.
Thank you. My name is Cynthia. I'm from Burnett County nearby, and my case is, again, with the family law issues. Specifically, just to give you a little background, I know we're not supposed to go into details, which I won't, but my case has been going on in family law for 5 years now, which to me is in no way the best interest of any child. Sorry. I've been through two custody evaluations, two formal mediations, three therapist mediations. The cost of the evaluations can be as much as $4,500,000 for a custody evaluation. I've been through two. The formal mediations with the judges run $3,000 to $5,000 a piece. I've been through two of those. All of these are court appointed by a judge. You have no choice, you have no say, you just have to do it. What I would like to see, sorry, in my throat. What I would like to see is limits on time to resolution of a case, limits on what the court-appointed evaluators can charge, and limits to the time and cost allowed per custody evaluations. One of my evaluations took 17 months, which you can imagine when I've been through all this, why it goes on for 5 years still with no resolution. I've also reached out to parents that are similar to my situation. So far, in the past few months, I've met with 28 parents personally that have similar issues. These parents have no criminal record, no mental illness, no parenting issues, but they all have had children removed from their lives. The common denominator seems to always be the same, and it's the fact that there's a lot of corrupt and biased professionals that are involved, that are appointed by the courts. The 28 people that I have collectively met with have in total spent $8.7 million fighting their battle in family court. I can give you a list of mothers that are currently or have been homeless because of family court. I ask that you take a deeper look into the corruption, the common circles of lawyers, judges, and psychologists, because there are many. My case has been, as I said, it's been in court for 5 years. There were final orders entered out of the blue. There was no motion filed. There was no hearing scheduled. I now see my son 28% of the time. My child support is ordered three times what it should be because nobody asked me for tax returns or proof of income. They've ordered back child support since I filed 5 years ago, and so they've now reported that I am $15,000 behind in child support, which is showing up on my credit report, which is now affecting me getting car loans, a place to live. They're threatening to take my passport when I work for a company out of Europe. I had no idea that these orders were filed, and the other side intentionally waited 3 months to notify me so I couldn't do anything about it. Now my only option is to go find another attorney, pay the $10,000, $20,000 retainer, and try and file a bill of review to fight this. I ask you to have stiffer penalties for ex parte communications and for actions that violate our rights and our due process. That's all.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. The next witness is Kyle Holland. Thank you, Mr. Holland.
Thank you. I would like to start off by just asking some simple questions. First question I would like to ask is everyone here aware that the similarity between the Nazi Third Reich and the Ku Klux Klan was Christianity? Is everyone aware of that? Christianity. It's been used as a form of terrorism throughout the history of inhumanity. Is everyone here aware that Greg Abbott, Donald Trump, and Jeff Sessions all claim to be Christian? Is everyone here aware that the similarity between the Nazi Third Reich and the Ku Klux Klan is also the false ideology of white supremacy? Is everyone here aware that World War II actually happened? Does anyone deny that World War II actually happened? Nobody. Good. Is everyone here aware that Hitler was able to do what Hitler was able to do by appointing only members of the Christian white supremacist party known as the Nazis to the positions of officers of the court, including judges, attorneys, and oversight committees, which would never hold accountable the officers of the court, including the judges and attorneys, who practice law with the malicious intent to obstruct justice and prevent the execution of civil process while depriving people who were not members of the Nazi Third Reich of their God-given, unalienable, equal human rights and civil liberties? I'm hoping that you people, who are the ones who are responsible for holding accountable lawless, corrupt, unprincipled judges, have enough cojones to stand up against Abbott, Sessions, Trump, and their judges and attorneys. You are our last defense. As we, the people of the United States of America, have given our consent to only be governed by the Constitution, and civil servants who have placed their hands on a Bible while talking to God, swearing that they're going to use the law to treat other people equally. And in the Bible, it talks about corrupt, unprincipled, lawless people in positions of officers of the court who trample God's courts by seizing the possessions of the widows and the orphans and forcing people into homelessness. And that is exactly what these people have said that is going on, right? There is an oversight committee that is over the federal judges in Texas. It's called the Fifth Circuit. There are four members of Greg Abbott's former own legal counsel on the Fifth Circuit. Do you understand that in the event that you sue a judge in federal court, that oversight committee for Texas is now run by Greg Abbott's minions? So if you sue a federal court judge in federal court, it goes to the Fifth Circuit, and all of those people are influenced by Abbott. Abbott goes around bragging, "Don't mess with Texas." You know why? Because he's got everybody in his pocket. So now, if you have a beef with Abbott because he's got a judge who's taking your children away when you haven't committed any crimes, there's no recourse. That's what she was saying. That's what Alex Jones' wife was just saying. How do we, the people of the United States of America, hold accountable individual members of the State Judiciary Conduct Committee, who have all been appointed by Greg Abbott's prejudiced white supremacist Christian terrorist organization, who do not hold accountable lawless, corrupt, unprincipled, money-loving, lying, prejudiced white supremacist Christian terrorist judges in the deep state of Texas, who swore an oath to treat other people equally in a court of law as a civil servant while placing their hand on a Bible while talking to God? As Eric Vincent and Royce Lemoyne are aware, over the course of the last 14 months, the Judiciary Conduct Committee received no less than 9 lawsuits from me against judges in this state because my children were taken away from me when I did not commit any crimes. However, I did go public with the true story of my black girlfriend named Gina LeMay Jackson having been raped and sadly coerced into getting an abortion by a pimp named Vadik Marmar in exchange for Gina to be seen being exploited as a celebrity prostitute for a cult called the Burning Man in San Francisco. And just to make sure that nobody could doubt that what I say is true, Vadik was kind enough to post a video on Facebook titled "How to Brainwash Girls into the Burning Man Cult for the Whole World to See." It is not a crime to go public with the rape of my girlfriend. However, apparently it is a crime to date a black girl in the white supremacist Christian terrorist state of Texas when Greg Abbott appoints like-minded white supremacist Christian judges and attorneys to the positions of officers of the court. And now we, the people of the United States of America want to know how to hold accountable individual members of the State Judiciary Conduct Committee and the members of the Fifth Circuits, including Eric Vinson and Royce LeMoyne, who have refused to hold accountable the judges who signed court orders taking away my children when I did not commit any crimes. And it's my legal right to ask this question in a public hearing. How do we, the people of the United States of America, contact the International Criminal Court in The Hague to prosecute the lying, prejudiced, white supremacist, Christian terrorist people in positions of man-made power and authority within the United States government, including the President of the United States of America, the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the Governor of Texas Abbott, their judiciary appointees, including the judges, attorneys, and individual members of oversight committees, including the Fifth Circuit and the Judiciary Conduct Committee of Texas. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your appearance, sir, and your testimony. The next witness is Selena Hart.
Thank you. I don't know if I'm allowed to, but I would like to submit 50 pages of evidence of judges breaking the law and violating my due process. I believe the statute of limitations for complaints against attorneys and judges should be extended. I have had no fair hearing or trial for 2 years. This is a kangaroo court with judges receiving huge financial contributions from large law firms. I certainly admire men who fully support 50-50 custody for fully weaned children. Unfortunately, when in the case of an abusive man, he can use the child as a pawn of abuse in the legal system. In my case, the father in no way cares for our child, but his extended family have been given my baby. This could have been completely prevented if there were fewer people making money off of our distress and the gross separation of a child from a parent. I currently owe $56,000 in attorney's fees and pay 50% of my income in support for my child. I am obligated to over 100% of my decent income in order to pay professionals in my case. Yet, I do not see my child at all. He is 3 years old. I am under an order that can put me in jail the moment the father files in court. Individuals that go through the judicial system end up traumatized and abused. This affects their intellectual and emotional capacity to function as good members of the community. I have gone 8 times and more with more than 2 consecutive months of no access to my darling boy. I have not been a parent to my angel for 2 years. I have seen my son 10 times for a couple hours in the past 7 months. I have been jailed for 30 days for failure to pay $36,000 in attorney's fees. I am neither a criminal nor have done any wrongdoing in the eyes of criminal courts. This jailing was despite an affirmative defense of inability to pay attorney's fees and based on testimony of hearsay. Why do I think this happened? Because I raised my voice and sought custody when my child complained of pain in areas that I feel embarrassed to mention to this court. My 2-year-old baby was screaming not to be hurt, and I sought custody. I had 4 months of PI evidence showing that the father had nothing to do with my child, yet the court refused to hear me. I was refused and prohibited from bringing evidence to the court as a pro se litigant. Why was this money awarded to the father and $36,000? This money was awarded to the father for 1 hearing and 2 motions in 2 weeks' time. Why would this happen? Because I took my baby to the beach out of state for 2 weeks and then came home. This was not a violation of the court order. Why would an intelligent, sane, educated woman do such a thing as take her baby out of state during litigation? Because a judge told her 6 times she would be without this child. Don't think he would not take this baby from his mother. If she does not shape up, she will lose custody, because that's the way things are going to go. My baby, my nursing baby, was ripped from my breast with no wrongdoing. I have gone 2 years since that time of having any contact of any significant means with him. After that moment, I went 2 months without any contact whatsoever. I have been abused, raped, assaulted, not only by a man, but by this judicial system. I have been unjustly treated. What did I do wrong? I complained that my baby needed milk and was losing weight. I complained about the father's drug use, and I filed for child support. Who was the baby going to be giving to? A stranger. A man who provided no support to the mother of our child and refused to see the child before the Attorney General's office told him that he had to pay child support. I spent 6 months petitioning the court pro se for access to my child, but was prohibited each time from presenting evidence by judicial actions. I have had each petition denied in contradiction to the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, Texas Family Code, and the U.S. Constitution and the Texas Constitution. As a pro se litigant, I should not be denied justice. I'm among the top 20% in education in the U.S., and I am perfectly capable of downloading a form from O'Connor's and doing research. This is after contributing to this corrupt system $400,000. I do not know if my child is well, whole, safe, and nurtured. Forget how this has ruined me. What about him? How will he ever be able to trust other individuals, his mother, and form proper attachments? You guys have a lot of work cut out for you. Thank you.
Thank you for your service. The next witness is Rhonda Finney. Ms. Finney, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. I hold these 5 minutes very precious, so if you don't mind, I'm going to read what I've written down. My name is Rhonda Finney. I have an Austin, Texas meetup group called Speak Love. It stands for Shared Parenting Encouraging Advocacy for Children, for Kids. I know many of these people here. I also know thousands of more parents, not only citywide, nationwide. I know them globally. This is a pandemic happening. An effort to not repeat what we heard Mike Clifton, Josh Jaros, Gabriel Corneo, Kelly Jones, Cindy, and many others share, I just want to further acknowledge the racketeering happening in Travis County and Williamson County family courts. What Josh Jaros said about the powers and influences of money are very true. Title IV defunding is a huge issue and warrants analysis and revamping. As we all know, there are two approaches in family law, a collaborative, cooperative approach, which is collaborative law, and then the competitive, adversarial approach, which many of us are informing you of here today. There's tremendous racketeering happening in family law with these adversarial cases. These are families in crises coming into the courtroom for help and intervention. But what happens in a competitive approach is one parent is deemed the winner, and the other parent is deemed the loser. The losing parent experiences extreme character defamation, gaslighting, unfathomable expenses, temporary orders that can go on until the child ages out, and trauma that can last a lifetime. What we're experiencing are civilized and systematic oppression and violence. If there wasn't already violent family violence happening before entering the courtroom, there certainly is through family court and its supporting systems. When you give one parent power and control over the other parent and children and allow him or her to abuse that power, you're creating family violence. It's creating or fostering the violence that was already there. You're condoning violence. What we're seeing in family courts are obstructions of justice, lack of due process, gaslighting, false accusations, manipulation of evidence, lack of equal access to fair litigation, abuse of discretionary powers, biased judges and professionals, By the way, everyone is biased to a certain degree. We all know that. We all have our own schema. We enter the courtroom with our own running narrative. And so we ask for these judges and these supporting professionals to be reflective practitioners, to be as impartial as possible. We appoint you in these positions to uphold these laws and integrity. What's happening? On a city and county level, we should also acknowledge a very recent tragic case that happened in Travis County courts. It was the Kaplan case. It happened in December of 2017. A father was entrapped in family court in the family law systems, was being experiencing tremendous gaslighting and alienation, immense expense, and could have been facing bankruptcy like many of us have. I've been bankrupted too. I've been adversely affected. My son has too. Yarv Kaplan, in December of 2017, shot his 9-year-old daughter and killed her and committed suicide. I, as an advocate for family law reform and spreading awareness of parental alienation, have heard so many cases of parents committing suicide and children, 8-year-olds, outcries for help and to just have their parents resolve matters. But how can we do to these faulty systems? On a personal note, my divorce was seemingly amicable. My hell began within 1 week of my spousal support ending. My ex-husband's emotional state was taken advantage of. We're now, 4 years later, having to clean up the mess. He's afraid to go back into the courtroom because he now realizes how corrupt it is. We're back to a 50-50 JMC situation, which is wonderful with our son, but we've all been traumatized. I've been financially exhausted. My ex-husband was fired from his job, and he hasn't regained employment. It's been almost 1 year. We're picking up the pieces. What about the attorneys and the judge and everyone who participated? What are they doing for us? We're too afraid to go back in the courtroom. Please help restore integrity and clean up our family courts. Thank you.
Thank you. The next witness is Brandon Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today and
well, you have 5 minutes.
Giving me this opportunity. I am Brandon Johnson. I'm just an everyday guy, just another John Doe, nobody special, except the 2 kids who call me dad. And that's what brought me down, driving 3 hours today to get here. And I do appreciate your time, because I, too, have been affected by the family court system. It is a system that's unjust, just a system that's sold out to profiting off of destroying families and creating a fatherless society. And all of this is done through garnering Title 40 monies. But I've got a hard time believing that all judges and you folks here are evil people carrying out some kind of evil scheme. Yet our families are impacted by the decisions that the judges make and that y'all hold them accountable to. The trouble with the family court system is that the decisions are made, and it's been said today, boilerplate proceedings resulting in boilerplate orders. And we have a broken system. And how do we know it's a broken system? When you have ordinary citizens like myself, these parents in this room, lay people, digging into the law, understanding the root causes of the injustice by learning the family law code, rules of civil procedure, rules of the appellate courts, code of federal regulation, code of, I've said the civil procedure. Being able to quote a large section of these things that most people in America have never heard about, it means our system is broken. We should not be dedicating our time to these type of things. In order to restore faith in this broken judicial system, judges must be not just be held to the letter of the law and the rules, but the moral and ethical foundations from which they were put in place. In the judicial trust and confidence report that was just put out, there's a quote from a French novelist: "To distrust the judiciary marks the beginning of the end of society." Now, this committee is supposed to stand in the gap by holding judges accountable. They don't need any more validation or approval of their bad actions. And we don't, the numbers in your reports, you know, there's 1,500 cases submitted. And out of that, only 50, I think it was this last year, were prosecuted. The numbers just don't add up. And I think that is a very, that's going to be the telling thing next year for us. It really is. I mean, that's less than 1%. It defies mathematics. So we need our judges upholding constitutional law instead of above unconstitutional statutes. We need more than placating reports about public judge confidence. We need you to help us restore confidence in the judiciary by addressing the systemic problems of injustice instead of surface level issues. Now, in your capacity as this committee, the only thing we can truly ask is for you to send a message to the judges through disciplinary action. And like I said, okay, and so that is my plea to you. Just again, stand in the gap for those of us who do not have the ability to correct the injustice on our own. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your appearance, Mr. Johnson. And the next witness is Dawn
Bai.
Bai,
yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay. You have 5 minutes.
Yes, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And of course, I can't find my notes. Okay, here we go. Good afternoon, distinguished commissioners, Mr. Chair, and victim parents that have come today. I have been sitting here listening to the testimony, so I won't overburden any of you with information that you've already received. What I would like to do is speak to you about potential solutions to these problems. They are very emotionally charged and very complicated, and I respect that. Through my 13 years trapped in family court, I have adapted a formula to effectively track all of these over-litigated cases, and you probably would be startled to find out that the same 7 to 10 professionals just in Travis County Court are always attached to high-conflict, over-litigated family court cases. I'm only going to give a brief summary of what I do. It is the docket watch. I copy the daily docket every day and have so for 2 years. And I randomly, forgive me, I'm nervous. I randomly select red flag cases that appear to have the markings of lawsuit abuse or over-litigated child custody cases. In December of 2017 alone, I red flagged 15 cases. And I started conducting my own investigations to see as objectively as I could what the possible solutions could be. And what I have determined based on what other states are doing and they have implemented quite successfully is to introduce and ask the commission to support me in my efforts to independently investigate the red flag cases and present reports to your commission on my findings and cite all of the public records information that I gather. What I'm finding is very disturbing, for example, and then I'll close because I'm hoping you'll ask me questions. On an average in Travis County Family Court, there are an average of 2,000 active divorces every single month in Travis County alone. In a stark comparison, there are always an active 11,000 child custody modifications that are active every single month just in Travis County alone. What my goal is to try to find solution-based alternatives to family court over litigation so we can protect the victims and give these children back their childhood. And with that, if anybody would like to ask me questions, I scrapped my entire speech because I didn't want to, regurgitate everything that's been spoken today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
No questions?
We're not going to ask any questions.
Okay, I understand.
But we appreciate it.
I will submit all of my information. The daily docket research that I have been compiling for 2 years, I think you will find very, very interesting, and it is all public record, and I can help you. I'm not asking for money. I can help navigate you through the formula that I have come up with that is specifically identifying those cases that are over-litigated. And if anybody would like a copy of my findings so far and how I am conducting these investigations, I'll leave my information, and I hope that you contact me because I do have solid evidence and names of parties that are involved. And we could actually do something proactive, sir, that will help alleviate all of these problems that these families are going through. And still, the state can make money. I'm sorry.
If you'd like to submit some documentation, you may do so.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you, members. I appreciate the time.
Everyone who signed up to be a witness has had an opportunity to speak. And we have no further business to conduct today after hearing from you fine folks, and we appreciate you being here. So with that, the hearing is adjourned. Thank you for your appearance.
Thank you, members.